Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It may come as a surprise to you, but some people call me names on the internet. Can you imagine that? Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And I've gotten used to this. It comes with the territory of speaking on controversial issues when you have a public platform. But a few weeks ago, I think I was speaking about capitalism and free markets, and someone gave me an insult that I actually was really amused by. They said, Trent Horn is the world's youngest boomer. And several other people wrote underneath my statuses, okay, boomer, over and over again, which I think some of them legitimately thought that I was part of the baby boomer generation. And I thought to myself, do you really think that? I'm 35 years old, not a baby boomer. I'm squarely within the millennial category. So why would you say that? Well, I'll answer that question later in the podcast, but it gave me an idea. Why not do a free-for-all Friday on generations, all the different generations that have come before us and the generations on the horizon looking forward into the future? So that's what we're going to talk about today. So on free-for-all Friday in the podcast, we cut loose, have fun, talk about all kinds of interesting topics. Tuesdays and Thursdays, for those of you who are new to the podcast, we talk about theology, apologetics, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. I've got some debates coming up that I'll be sharing on the podcast, dialogues and Sola Scriptura, all kinds of great content. If you want to support all this content, please consider going to TrentHornPodcast.com, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to bonus content and you keep the podcast going. Now, for today's Free For All Friday, let's talk about the different generations. So, all right, think to yourself, what is the oldest generation that you can think of in the Western world or American history? Like, what is the furthest one going back that you can think of that has a distinctive name? Now, you're probably thinking of the greatest generation, which grew up during the Depression and World War II. And you're close. You're almost there. But there's one actually before the greatest generation, and they're called the lost generation. These were individuals in the U.S. who were born. Actually, it also includes the United States and Europe. They were born between 1883 and 1900. So these are people who were born in the 19th century or at the very, very beginning of the 20th century. And they're called the lost generation because they grew up during World War I. Many of them fought in World War I, or they saw people go off to fight. And this is a cataclysmic event in 20th century history. I mean, it was called the Great War, and nobody had seen death and destruction on this scale before in modern history, at least when it comes to something like combat. So those who survived the war and saw people come home from it, they were kind of lost and directionless. So the term was popularized in the subtitle of Ernest Hemingway's novel, The Sun Also Rises, which is a novel about expatriates or expats from, I think, England and the United States living in continental Europe and their lives in Paris. And also there's a famous scene in Pamplona, Spain, where people go to see the running of the bulls. And so what happened with the people of this generation is that they're lost, directionless, they're questioning a lot of things. And that so there's this despair kind of during the war, the Great War, between 1914 and 1918. But then when the 1920s hit, you get the Roaring Twenties. There's economic prosperity, and a lot of people experience what was called survivor relief. So you have survivor guilt, where you feel bad about getting through a traumatic ordeal. But a lot of commentators talk about how the lost generation in the 1920s had a kind of survivor relief. And now that the Great War was over, there was economic prosperity, they kind of wanted to party and let loose. If you look at old footage of Paris in the 1920s, it's described as very bohemian, elaborate costume parties and balls. F. Scott Fitzgerald's novella, The Great Gatsby, really describes this scene well, of people living decadent lifestyles, consumerism, materialism. And there were advents in technology that allowed this to progress. One of those would be the development of the talkie. So there are motion pictures before this time, but in the late 1920s, films eventually got sound, which allowed them to reach a wider audience. So here's a clip from a 1929 film. This is a 1929 talkie starring Mary Pickford, to give you an idea of cinema at this time.
Michael Jeffrey. Why, isn't he that young fella from the hills that has been hanging around town again lately?
Oh, now, honey precious, how can you say such horrible things about poor Michael?
Well, Norma, I gathered that he was just an ordinary loafer, a quarrelsome young fellow who was doing a lot of drinking and gambling.
Oh, no, honey precious. He may have sort of a quick temper, but he's really a diamond in the rough.
You'll notice also that Mary Pickford, that during the 20s and 30s, a lot of female actresses use this kind of Betty Boop affectation when they're speaking, kind of talking in sort of that baby doll voice, which is very popular at the time. Fact about this generation, it no longer exists. The last person who'd be identified as being a part of this generation died in 2018. So Nabi Tajima died in 2018 after spending recent years at a nursing home. At 117, she was the world's oldest person and the last known person to have been alive in the 19th century, as she was born on August 4th, 1900. So she's being counted as at the tail end of that, and she was from Japan, actually. I found another clip I think you guys really like. It's so fascinating to have video and audio clips from the 1920s, because there's a few online that interview people who were senior citizens and were elderly at that time, and it provides a giant leap back in time. Here's an interview with two guys who fought in the Civil War at the Battle of Wilson's Creek. They fought for the Confederacy, but it's so fascinating to hear them talk about it. So here's two gentlemen in their 80s and 90s being interviewed in 1929, talking about fighting in the Civil War.
From there, we went to Springfield, Missouri, where we had the Battle of Wilson Creek, where General Lyon was killed on the 10th of August. The bravest man I ever saw was General Lyon. After he was completely surrounded and pulled off of his horse, he picked up rocks and fought with thousands of men around him. He struck Will Morgan in the face with a rock, and John Morgan shot him with an old-fashioned horse pistol. How old are you?
I'm 94.
94, pretty good age for a young man.
Yes,
kid.
Yes. Now you ask me how old I am.
Well, how old are you?
84.
84. You was in the same...
In the same war.
Under the same general.
Under the same general, General Price.
That's good. Fine old man, too.
So they're talking about the Battle of Wilson's Creek being led by General Sterling Price, which ended up being a Confederate victory. So as a history buff, remember, I went to Arizona State University. I got my bachelor's degree in history. I had a love of history ever since my high school junior year American history teacher really ignited that love of history for me. So I love when we have resources like this to dig back further into time. All right, the next generation that came after the Lost Generation is the Greatest Generation. These are individuals born from 1901 to 1927, and they were marked by growing up through the Great Depression and World War II. The name The Greatest Generation was popularized in a 1998 book by Tom Brokaw, you know, Tom Brokaw, the news correspondent. And here's a clip of him talking about how he wrote this book chronicling the Greatest Generation. I believe he wrote it during, he went to an anniversary of the D-Day landing, during that celebration about World War II veterans. And he was encouraged to write a book chronicling the accounts of this generation, their personality traits, their accomplishments, their struggles. And he wrote all of this down in his book that he called The Greatest Generation, and hence where the term came from. And here's a story he tells about how once he was in a sporting goods store, and there was a man who was looking at him very nervous and wanted to talk with him. And then Brokaw says, "Well, you want to talk to me?" And then they start to have this conversation.
I could tell that he wanted to say something. So I said, "Hello, how are you?" And he said, "I want to tell you about your book. I worked on our ranch with my father from the day he came home from World War II until a year ago. We seldom talked about our lives or about anything that was meaningful to him. And last year at this time, he was dying. At Christmas time, I didn't know what to do, so I went to town and bought your book, and I sat at his bedside and began to read from it. And he began to tell me stories I had never heard before about landing on D-Day and being wounded and thinking he was going to die there, and then being taken by one of the landing craft out to a ship where he was treated, patched up, and sent back into combat again. And for 50 years, I didn't know those stories. So I sat by his bed every day until he died on Father's Day. And I read from the book, and we talked about those stories, and you changed the life of my family." Well, I had tears in my eyes. He had tears in his eyes. My wife had walked up. His wife had walked up. The four of us, grown up, standing there, kind of giggling and crying at the same time. And it was, for me, what I believe was the emblematic story of the reaction. Families that had not talked about were drawn together again by this book. And later I met his daughter, who's an English teacher, and she said, "You changed the life of our family. We now talk in ways we never did before about everything, so that we have a shared memory and a shared history."
My wife is actually reading a book now about a World War II veteran POW survivor in the Pacific Theater called Unbroken. And she tells me all the stories about what this guy went through. And it just makes me feel like such a little spoiled marshmallow when I read stories about the Greatest Generation. Aziz Ansari did a comedy series on Netflix, and he talks about how his parents like immigrated to the United States and tried to overcome huge obstacles. Or he was in a comedy. It was in a comedy set that he did. And he said, what am I going to tell my kids about what I overcame in my generation? You know, one time, kids, I was flying from New York to Los Angeles and my iPad died. You know, when you hear these stories, you see these tremendous hardships these individuals went through. The research professor of sociology, Glenn Hall Elder Jr., who was a prominent figure in the development of life course theory, according to this article, wrote Children of the Great Depression in 1974, which is the first longitudinal study of a Great Depression cohort. Elder followed 167 individuals born in California between 1920 and 1921 and traced the impact of depression and wartime experiences from the early years to middle age. So these are people who were born, they grew up as little kids during the Roaring Twenties, but then when they hit their teen years, they have the Great Depression. Then when they hit adulthood, they're fighting in World War II. He says most of these children of the Great Depression fared unusually well in their adult years. They came out of the hardships of the Great Depression with an ability to know how to survive and make do and solve problems. But I think there was a cost to this resilience and hardship that the Greatest Generation, Laura was telling me about this in the book Unbroken, that men who had come back from World War II, people asked them, what happened? I don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about what they went through. It gets bottled up inside. There's one scene where one of the veterans from the Pacific Theater, who is a prisoner of war, he's at a restaurant and they serve him a bowl of rice. And he just has this flashback of what happened in the Pacific Theater and in the POW camp. And he flips over the table and they're just, you know, psychologically wounded from this. And a way to deal with the wounds is to simply not talk about it, which isn't good for anybody. So if you want to learn more about this generation, I definitely recommend Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation, that he wrote back in 1998. All right, here's the next generation, the Silent Generation. This comes right after the Greatest Generation. These are people who were born in between 1928 and 1945. So these were people for whom their childhood, young childhood, was defined by World War II. They were little kids when World War II was happening. In fact, Tom Brokaw, when he talked about his book, The Greatest Generation, he is not a part of that generation. I believe he was born in 1940, so he's placed squarely in the Silent Generation. And he talked about how he lived on an army base during that time, and he just remembered as a kid during the war running around with toy guns fighting Germans and Japanese. But then after the war, when that period of prosperity set in, they were defined by a kind of silence and obedience and hardworking mentality that they directly received from the Greatest Generation. So Time Magazine first used the term Silent Generation in a November 5th, 1951 article titled The Younger Generation. A reason later proposed for this perceived silence is that as young adults during the McCarthy era, many members of the Silent Generation felt it was unwise to speak out. So during the 1950s, you have economic prosperity, but you also have the communist Red Scare. So we pitch from fighting the Nazis to fighting the communists, worrying about the Red Scare. You don't want to say anything that will cause you to be blacklisted. So they're identified as being silent, strong, stable. And according to this article, unlike the previous generation who had fought for changing the system, the Silent Generation were about working within the system. They did this by keeping their heads down and working hard, thus earning themselves the silent label. Their attitudes leaned toward not being risk takers and playing it safe. Fortune magazine's story on the college class of 1949 was subtitled Taking No Chances. So here is a clip from an educational film from the 1950s that gives you an idea of the cultural expectations during this time of the Silent Generation.
The women of this family seem to feel that they owe it to the men of the family to look relaxed, rested, and attractive at dinner time. Brother notices the time and realizes that he must put things in order and clean himself up in time for dinner. These boys greet their dad as though they are genuinely glad to see him, as though they had really missed being away from him during the day and are anxious to talk to him. This is the time for pleasant discussion in a thoroughly relaxed mood. They don't pick this time of the day to spring unpleasant surprises on Dad.
So I got to admit, I wouldn't mind when I walk in the door, my whole family chose during that moment when I'm trying to get a sense of my bearings that unpleasant news is not sprung on me at that moment. But you get this idea of conformity, obeying authority, but then that would all start to change here in the latter part of the 1950s and the 1960s. And of course, that brings us to the famous, or for some people, infamous baby boomers who were born between 1946 and 1964. So Sylvia Porter wrote in 1951 in the New York Post about a boom in pregnancies and in the birth rate in the 1950s, just after the war, due to post-war prosperity. However, it wouldn't be until 1963 in a Daily Press article that the term baby boomer would be used, because this described all those who were born subsequently right after the war ended were now going off to college in the 1960s, hence the term the baby boomers came from. These individuals experience a lot of cultural change. If you go on YouTube, there's great videos that talk about the most popular songs every year. And what's interesting is when you look at the songs from like 1930 all the way up to like 1955, they're all very slow and mellow, or they sound the same. There's nothing really that radical about them. But as soon as you get to like 1955, onward, you have Elvis, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, you see that culture undergoes a radical transformation. And not just in music, but of course, you have the countercultural movement, the later peace movement with the Vietnam War, the civil rights movement, second wave feminism. And this change in ideals doesn't affect just the baby boomers, but even older generations at this time, like members of the Greatest Generation, start to experience a cultural shift. Here is a vintage interview from Australia in 1961 asking the question, should the bikini be banned? So we enter now the 1960s. Radical change. And what's happening here is that the bikini, what's funny is it was named after the Bikini Atoll, where the nuclear bomb tests were done, as if this was kind of a bombshell outfit. And I believe originally that prostitutes or escorts were hired to model these, and it was thought it was a joke, that this would never catch on at all, but it certainly did. And so it's fascinating to see people's attitudes and how even at this early time, you even have older generations saying, just let people do what they want. So here's some of that interview.
Do you think that bikinis should be banned?
No, I do not. Why?
Well, I was about to ask you why, but you beat me to it.
No, well, I don't think they should be. I think if everybody to their own...
Somebody tripped over it, yes?
Everybody to their own liking. I think if they like it, well, have it on.
I think a girl's got the right figure to wear, and she should be entitled to wear it.
Well, they should be banned for some figures, then.
Definitely.
Well, should the bikini be banned? Oh, maybe for some people. So you see this shift in cultural attitudes, but then there's a shift back in the pendulum. So starting in the 1980s, the boomers became more conservative, many of them regretting the cultural changes they brought in their youth. The baby boomers became the largest voting demographic in the early 1980s and helped to elect Ronald Reagan as president. So sometimes I hope that maybe the millennials in my generation, we ushered in cultural changes that hopefully I'm seeing that we will come to regret those in the next 10, 20, or 30 years, and maybe we'll have a similar swing in the pendulum back. Which brings us to the insult okay boomer, or the retort okay boomer. That became popular in the fall of 2019. Millennials have put it in TikTok videos, and they continue to do it. And it's a retort to the older generation saying they're clinging to older, outmoded ideas, or that they are the source of social ills today. Though it isn't just given to members of the baby boomer generation. Anyone who holds to more of these reactionary ideas, or I would say traditional ideas about the nature of the family, the nature of morality, can have the label okay boomer thrown at you, which happens to me. Now on to the next generation, Generation X, born between 1965 and 1980. Their coming of age was the late 70s, the 80s, the early 90s. For me, when I was in high school, the Gen Xers I knew were people who were college grads, post-college grads, the young adults, the cool kids that I looked up to. You know, they went to, when I was just a child in the 80s, they were the ones going to junior high school parties in the 1980s. They were into early 90s grunge, Nirvana. According to this article, Gen Xers were sometimes called the latchkey generation due to reduced adult supervision compared to previous generations. This was a result of increasing divorce rates and increased maternal participation in the workforce prior to widespread availability of childcare options outside the home. So when women went back to work in the 1960s, this great cultural shift. A lot of these Gen Xers ended up walking home alone from school and being raised by television. But unlike the baby boomers, who were raised by shows like Howdy Doody, they were raised by MTV, hence they were the MTV generation. This article says they're often characterized as being slackers, cynical, and disaffected, though many Gen Xers of the time said that they were referred to as being lazy simply because they couldn't find any jobs because of a recession and poor job prospects in the late 1980s. But the one show, figure, or symbol of Gen Xers, I would say, is easily the cartoon Beavis and Butthead that aired on MTV. So to have these short sketches, Beavis and Butthead were these two teenagers, college students, who were annoying and sarcastic and cynical and had a flagrant disregard for authority. And so they worked at a fast food restaurant. They were abusive to customers. They just sat on a couch and watched music videos and made fun of them. Hence, they were the show for MTV. Oh, by the way, I will say that among Gen Xers, there are many people today who grew up in the Gen X generation who are not slackers or disaffected. They're very successful, and their rebellious attitude has made them that way. These include people like Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and even the rapper Jay-Z. So before we go to the next generation, though, to my generation, I got to play a clip of Beavis and Butthead so you can get an idea of this cultural touchstone. This is from season 2, episode 12. Beavis and Butthead are working at this fast food restaurant, and a customer is trying to ask them a question, and they just don't care at all. So this same kind of mindset would also show up in the Kevin Smith film Clerks, which also stars Gen Xers and this disregard for authority, social mores, this slacker, cynical attitude. So here's a clip of Beavis and Butthead engaging a customer at their fast food restaurant.
Yeah, you use the shake mix, or yeah, you use the real stuff?
Yeah.
Cool. Are your shakes made with real milk and ice cream, or do you use that reconstituted shake mix stuff?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Yeah, you use the shake mix, or yeah, you use the real stuff?
Yeah.
Let me talk to the manager.
So that was Beavis going, yeah. And then Butthead then walks into the scene.
I'm an assistant manager, sir. Is there something I can help you with?
Yes, I'm trying to ask a very simple question here. Are your shakes made from shake mix or from ice cream and milk?
We have vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Yeah.
Forget it! Forget it! Can't you idiots answer a simple question? I'll go somewhere else.
Morons! Gee, couple of imbeciles.
Let's go break something.
Yeah.
I also have my own marker for dividing generations based on cultural change. So the Gen Xers went through high school and went through childhood without having high-speed internet. Now, I, as a millennial, remember the introduction of high-speed internet and how that changed everything. The generation after the millennials, we'll get to shortly, I would say that these are young people who always had high-speed internet and never knew dial-up modems and what that was like. You would turn on your computer, turn on the modem. So without further ado, here are the millennials, my generation, born between 1981 and 1996. Not only, as I said before, they saw high-speed internet come out, but also mobile devices. I remember being in junior high, having a brick cell phone my parents gave me. Unlike the Gen Xers, who were latchkey kids who could walk around without any supervision whatsoever, we were given brick cell phones to be able to call our parents. We also remember 9/11. I was in high school when 9/11 happened, and we grew up with a sense of destabilization in the world, not just with geopolitics, but also with religion, because after 9/11, you had the rise of new atheism. So for millennials, a lot of things were up in the air politically, socially, and even religiously. According to this article, research by the Urban Institute conducted in 2014 projected that if current trends continue, millennials will have a lower marriage rate compared to previous generations, predicting that by age 40, 31% of millennial women will remain single, approximately twice the share of their single Gen X counterparts. Millennials also are more likely to reside with their parents. It says high student debt is described as one reason for continuing to live with parents, but may not be the dominant factor for this shift, as the data shows the trend is stronger for those without a college education. So there's really a failure to launch for millennials. Millennials are also criticized as being pampered, spoiled, and we are participation trophy generation, that when you would take part in events, you wanted to make sure that as millennials were raised, self-esteem was very important. I remember this. You go out and do events, and everybody got a medal. Everybody got a participation trophy. Everybody's special, which means nobody's special. If you remember my comments on the Incredibles a few free-for-all Fridays ago, which has led to this criticism of the millennials, oftentimes is true, that I will say it. I have seen it. This is a wonderful comedy. this is a wonderful parody of workplace training videos, and its subject is how to accommodate millennials in the workforce. So this does, even though it is a parody, it does shed light on a few unfortunate truths about my generation.
It's a B2B company that provides cloud storage for Fortune 500 companies.
Chet, what did the market research turn up?
What? Oh, I Googled them, but the results were weird.
You didn't use the market research database that we spend thousands of dollars a month on and that you were specifically trained to use?
I quit. This job is different than I thought it would be.
Stop. Does this situation look familiar? A new type of worker has entered the workforce. They're called millennials, and they're terrible. Today, I'm going to teach you all about this new breed of worker so you can avoid misunderstandings in which you feel the need to fire them immediately. Mary makes the classic mistake of not reassuring Chet while offering overflowing amounts of praise.
Chet, you were so smart to use Google. That's the perfect way to start the research. You're so smart.
So the conference call is scheduled for 10:30, so that we're on the same page. Let's do a pre-call about 9:30 a.m.
I don't understand. Noodles.
In the morning.
9:30.
Cheryl Sandberg here isn't aware time exists before 10:30 a.m. To her generation, there's a mysterious dead zone after 4 a.m. and before they stroll into work 40 minutes late with their iced coffee. So take that into consideration for scheduling.
That's very difficult for me.
Fine, I'll take the call myself.
Oh, thank you.
Now, however, I need to stand up for millennials, because when I worked in college at a job in an office, my manager actually allowed me to have a schedule where I worked, I think, from 10:30 to 7 p.m. This is when I was single, just lived in my little studio apartment. And that worked for me because I would stay up late doing stuff. I would stay up late with work from the office. And then I would roll into the office at around 10:30 a.m. But then I would leave the office. I would be there. A lot of people went home at 5. I just went home at 7 o'clock. And that worked for me. And that non-traditional way of working actually increased my productivity. And I was actually doing better than a lot of other people when it came to finishing tasks and getting things done. So when it comes to millennials, we need to temper that criticism that's given to them. That, yeah, some of them are entitled, pampered, spoiled little brats. But you could also say that about many of the other generations as well, that they all have these bad tendencies. But when it comes to millennials, research shows that their non-traditional ways of working can bring creative benefits. They actually enjoy teamwork and a lot of feedback. So what some people will say is they have a desire for effusive praise. Actually, can be looked at in another way, saying, no, they just want to have a lot of feedback. They don't want to have this silo mentality of just working in a cubicle and just by yourself and just crunching numbers like a little machine. They want a lot of teamwork and interaction, which can be more productive overall. And they have an intuitive knowledge of technology, which allows them to adapt and learn more about things. So I will say, when it comes to understanding tech, the next generation might have us beat, and that would be Generation Z. It's a generation after the millennials, born between 1996 and 2010. So Gen Z, I would say, these are the people who always never knew what it was like to not have high-speed internet. And 9/11 is a big marker here. They don't remember what 9/11 was like. I was in high school. I remember the morning I woke up. My dad turned on the TV, showed me what was happening. We were in school all day watching TV, not getting anything done. But these were people who maybe they at the oldest, they were 5 years old. But for many of them, they were born after September 11th. So they only read about it in history books. They're also called iGen, and Generation Z is also a reference to millennials, or sometimes called Generation Y, because we came after Gen Xers, and so they become Gen Z as a result, or iGen. It says that mental depression has been said to be more common among Generation Z than any previous generation, with increased technological and online dependence and decreased face-to-face interaction as a key cause. Ironically enough, when you look at Pew trends and trends for behavior among adolescents, we're at one of our lowest periods of teen pregnancies and teen sexual activity, which is good. But the downside is the reason teens aren't having as many pregnancies or being as sexually promiscuous is because they're just not in the same room with one another. They would prefer to interact with one another through a phone or a computer than actually face to face. So we're trading one health malady, unintended teen pregnancies and teen sexual activity, for other health maladies like the inability to interact with people, screen time addiction, and other kinds of negative effects to people's emotional well-being because they don't have that genuine interpersonal communication. I found this video online, though, that I thought was hilarious and needed to share with you. It's a fight, so to speak, between a member of Gen Z and a millennial where they meet on the street and the millennial sees the Gen Zer making a TikTok video. And the millennial's like, oh, I remember my first challenge. What's that supposed to mean? And they get into this argument between one another, ripping into each other. But I thought it was hilarious. I'll play that for you.
Excuse me? What do you do for a living? Oh, wait, let me guess. You make avocado toast. Actually, it's an avocado toast delivery service. I'm in tech. Do you even have a job?
Job?
I have like 500,000 followers.
For what?
I do pranks on old people. Dude, that is so stupid.
Yeah, okay, boomer.
Dude, I'm not a boomer. I'm 30.
Oh my God, you're 30? How are you still alive?
Stop. Yo, we get it, okay? You were born in the 90s. Hey Arnold wasn't even that good.
What? Hey Arnold was groundbreaking.
Go read a BuzzFeed article. Being insulted by a toddler.
Ooh, are you having a hard time adulting right now?
Oop. I'm gonna oop, oop. Are you gonna oop?
Cringe. You don't even know what that means.
Dude, all your generation listens to is mumble rap.
First, Hey Arnold was groundbreaking, and I will defend that to my dying breath. And second, I love the observation that music today, it is mumble rap, but look what I've become. I'm like every other generation previously. What is with the music these kids listen to today? So that brings us to the last generation we're going to talk about. So Gen Z are the children of the Gen Xers. This generation, the last generation, are the children of the millennials, and that would be Generation Alpha. So those are people who were born from 2010 to 2025, and they're the only ones that have been born in the 21st century. So essentially, these are my kids and everyone I graduated with in high school who's having children right now, little kids that are alive today who were born just in the late 2010s, they're Gen Alpha. Says many members of Generation Alpha have grown up using, and it's sad. Oh, it's sad to see where the future's going. Many members of Generation Alpha have grown up using smartphones and tablets as part of their childhood entertainment. Some of their parents used electronic gadgets and pacifiers simultaneously. Others even use portable digital devices as pacifiers. A 2014 report from cybersecurity firm AVG stated that 6% of parents created a social media account and 8% an email account for their baby or toddler. So what does the future hold for these little guys? I don't know. But all we can do is do our best to pray for them and make the world just a good place for them. And that's why it's so good to have children. It's so good to have children because it makes you want to invest in the world in a way you just don't if you don't have children. Because you see, wow, I have kids. I mean, when I think about it now with my little guys, they're going to grow up and they may be grandparents at the end of, they might even live with the advances of medical technology. They might even live to see the 22nd century. That would be amazing. So I want to do my best to leave the world to be a good place for them, to spread the gospel as much as we can, but at the very least to teach them, even if the world goes to heck in a handbasket, to teach them to be self-reliant, independent, and to weather the storms that life throws at them. So I'm going to borrow a bit from the Greatest Generation. That's a terrible Tom Brokaw impersonation. I'm going to borrow from the Greatest Generation to teach them that independent self-reliance, add to that a little bit of my millennial creativity and independent thinking and unorthodox means of getting the job done. And I think incorporating that with a strong faith life, they will do just fine. So, hey, thank you guys so much for joining me today. Hope you really enjoyed the show, and I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.